As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to Rates and Barrels, presented by Topps. Check out all the Series 1 baseball NFTs that have dropped over at TopsNFTs.com. Derek Van Riper here with Eno Saris. On this episode, we have a lot of great questions from our mailbag. We have one listener who sent us some ideas about streaming steals and wanted to know if that was something we would consider doing in leagues with daily moves especially. Obviously a great idea if you can pull it off, so some interesting things to pull on there. A few drop questions and some questions that are kind of angling at how much to balance a very slow start through 15 to 20 games against a fast start, so we'll have a few players that we look at under the microscope in that regard. We've got some stuff plus and pitching plus questions, as well as a couple questions about foul balls and the value of those, and a new metric called Grip Plus proposed by one of our listeners as well. Eno, how's it going for you on this Thursday?
It's good. I like Thursdays. I got my long run out of the way, 8 miles yesterday, and we're looking straight at the weekend.
That's awesome. Yeah, I need to get my run in later today. I've got this show. I got to record the Athletic Baseball show. I got to bring my wife to the airport.
Oh.
Got to keep the dog fed. Edit these shows, but I'm going to try and run. Days are nice and long now. There's so much more daylight now. It's so much easier to go for a run on a work day now than it was back in the winter when it was dark at 4:30. That nonsense.
What do you do when your wife is away?
I don't know. It's been so long, I've forgotten. In the past, the last time I can remember her taking a trip without me was a work trip pre-COVID. Pretty soon after we got Hazel. So that time I just stayed home. We had a 5-month-old puppy or 6-month-old puppy. So I wasn't really going anywhere. I was on dog duty. So yeah, I don't really know. I mean, is this a situation you've been in before now where you have these limited windows where you have the house to yourself or you have a couple days to yourself? Like what should I be doing?
It happens every once in a while. And usually what I do is watch a movie from beginning to the end.
With that interruption.
I don't have to get up. I don't have to make food for anyone. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to, my wife and I, we have a little bit of time after we put the kids to bed. So a lot of times when we do see a movie, we have to see it in like sort of like half hour, hour increments.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, those like long, like Snyder Cut type movies, when you have to see it over like 4 nights, you're like, what are we still watching this? I think we bailed on the third portion of Tenet because we were just like, whatever, and then later she was out of town and I watched Tenet all the way through and I was like, well, that wasn't that bad actually when you watch it all the way through in one sitting.
Power through, right? Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. I think that's probably why in our home we have the same kind of routine, not because we have children, but just because of our work schedules are not perfectly in sync. So we get to the end of the day, 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, and we've got an hour, hour and a half before we go to sleep, and we're watching a couple shows. We don't really try to cram movies in. I think both of us, if not both of us, at least one of us is kind of fried and we're like, throw on something mindless. So it's usually an animated show, something we've seen a million times before. We binge watched Is It Cake? Which, let me tell you, they are coming up with some amazing reality shows. Some very talented people.
Whole story, a whole show about whether or not it's cake.
Extremely talented people. Like, I think cooking shows and baking shows are awesome. And I think the format for Is It Cake actually got me kind of excited, because it's part game show and it's part baking show. So I think I liked that show more than most people did. But if you're wondering why I don't watch the classics, well, that's part of the reason why. Maybe that's what I'll do. Maybe I'll follow your lead and just watch a movie, because the calm, the having fewer things to do, it's surprisingly a nice break from the norm. But let's get into some topics here. Streaming steals is something I think we've touched on at least once over the lifespan of the show. But this is an email that came in. Longtime listener, first time email. I'm in a daily 12-team head-to-head league with steals as a category. And like always, I find myself in need of some steals. I was wondering if you'd ever thought of trying to stream them. This probably won't work in a weekly format, but if you have a rotating roster spot in a daily league, it could have some utility. What kinds of things do you think would be beneficial to look at if you were going to try this out? And this particular listener actually sent us a worksheet that they've been trying to put together just to have some different things in there. I know they had a number of stolen bases per innings pitched, looking at pitchers who were on the mound for a lot of steals, try to target catchers that are not good at controlling the running game. So what factors would you be interested in if you were going to try something like this?
The stolen base is almost 100% stolen on the pitcher. We did a piece, Andrew Baggerly and I, about how the league is actually becoming much more efficient in stealing bases. In terms of like stolen base percentage, it's, you know, the highest it's ever been. And that's partially because everything's mathed out in today's league, but also partially because they've identified that the range basically in pop times and arm strength on catchers is smaller than the range in times to the plate for the pitcher. And so basically, you know, the pitcher's time to the plate, if it is over, I think it's 1.7 or something, then you steal bases. And if it's under, and then for the pitcher, it becomes like a very obvious target. Oh man, I'm at 1.8 or 1.9. They keep stealing on me. I forget. Was it? Yeah, it was. I think it was Juan Lopez. That somebody got on first. This Juan Lopez is in the news for other reasons.
He's everywhere right now.
But I believe that like he was pitching. Someone got on first. They stole second. And either they scored or they were gone. They were caught somehow other way, but not caught stealing. And then somebody got on first and they stole second. So it's like, that's what it's like if you, like Noah Syndergaard had this problem at some point. Like, if you don't change your time to the plate, either vary your looks over or cut that time to the plate down, you're a guy they steal on. So right now, the guy that everyone steals on is Sandy Alcantara. And it's fairly obvious. He's got 5 stolen bases. Like, the second place person has 3rd, it's Kyle Hendricks. And then there's a whole bunch of people with 1. So, you know, I might be looking at qualified. I'll change that leaderboard here. Let's see if it changes things. Oh, yeah. Noah Syndergaard, number 1, 7 stolen bases. He just wasn't there because he wasn't qualified. So, and it's not always lefty righty. Matt Moore is 3rd with 4. He's just slow to the plate. Tyler, I think it's Malley.
It's Malley. I think I've heard it as Malley over time. I thought it was Molly originally. Yeah. I think it's Tyler Malley.
Tyler Malley is 4th. You can't stream against like Ottavino or Hunter Strickland or Heath Hembree that are also on the list, but Kyle Hendricks is there. So, you know, I think if you're going to get super granular, you do this. You go over to Fangraphs, you click the fielding tab, pitchers, standard, and then you can sort by stolen bases. And then you can just look and see if anybody, you know, is on your list for this weekend. You know, it's hard. It's like, it's a little bit much. What I usually end up doing is just, because there's also relievers on there, right? So it's like, what am I doing here? So one thing that I have done, because I have Jorge Mateo on some leagues, and I think he's a terrible hitter. Apologies to Ian Kahn.
I don't know if Ian ever said he was a good hitter, but I just think value's been there.
He believes in him. Yeah. I don't want to hit. I don't want to play him as a hitter that often, but I do want the stolen bases. So what I have done with him is a slightly different version of this, which you just click over to team stats fielding, stolen bases allowed. And you still have a pretty good spread because you have the Angels with 16. Of course, seven of those are Noah Syndergaard's. And you have the A's with three. But it's like the A's with three, like the Yankees with three. I think I don't want to run Mateo against the Yankees over the weekend, especially when you have those like Friday, Saturday, Sunday things that you have in MSBC. Like, I'm not going to necessarily try to get Mateo in there for the weekend series against the Yankees. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I normally, if I am doing this, and I do this from time to time, I will look at the team fielding tab and just say, ooh, looks like Angels, Reds, Rangers, and Braves are the teams to steal against. But Guardians and Marlins, I think those are your six that you kind of want to steal against. Everybody else, they're more in the pack together.
That's a big enough pool, though, where if you are streaming one spot, there's probably someone playing against one of those six teams that's available that you can move into an outfield spot, usually, or possibly the UT spot, depending on the shape of your roster. And, you know, that might be an effective way to do well in the category. I think the only drawback I can think of, and this email came from Nick. Nick's league is a 12-team league. I think that's probably right at the threshold of not being too deep where you're getting completely buried in the other categories.
15 and 20, like, what are you looking at in 20-team leagues? You're, like, hoping some fourth outfielder plays enough to steal you a base.
Roman Quinn gets a start, and, you know, he gets on base against Sandy Alcantara. Well, great, that's fine. He steals a base, but what else is Roman Quinn going to do for you?
So yeah, that might be it for the weekend, one stolen base.
Which, you know, in some instances, that's all you need. But generally, I think this is possible. I think it does work more in daily leagues than in weekly leagues, and I think knowing that it's more on the pitchers than on the catchers, that does help you narrow it down a little bit as far as what you're looking for. And if I think targeting the worst of the worst starters is a good strategy. Like, the team approach is a good general approach, but if you know who those three or four horrible starters are at controlling the running game, you're going to get multiple cracks at those guys for anybody you put in the lineup on any particular day.
Yeah, I think especially in a 10-teamer, you know, there is this is the kind of elbow grease, the effort that you can I don't even know if I use
that's
right.
Correct usage.
Sometimes my German sits that comes out.
Elbow grease sounds like a thing that you would make up accidentally, but that's a real one.
All right, good. It is the kind of effort that you can put in to separate yourself from other people. Like, you can, and you can stream hitters. I think people don't do enough of that in 10-team leagues. I'm the kind of like staring at our 10-team league and just being like, man, like I want to activate Jonathan India, and I'm just like, who do I drop? They're all pretty good. Or you could just look at it and be like, they're all meh, you know. So should I just cycle through some spots? So it's like, I'm looking at Spencer Torkelson, right? Do I hold on to Spencer Torkelson in a 10-team league? I mean, probably gonna hit like 230, 240 with 25 homers. Yeah, that's pretty good, pretty good. But like in a 10-team league, you're like, I can maybe get more than that out of that spot.
Yeah, Jared Kelnick in a 10-team league, is he a must hold? Probably not, right? And I think that's where a few of the other questions from the rundown come from, is these more shallow formats and some of these difficult decisions you have to make early in the year and trying to decide, did I just make a mistake and should I accept it as a sunk cost? Thanks a lot again for that email, Nick. But the next couple questions are about Jonathan India and the other player, Edilberto Mondesi, who's hurt right now, which I think adds a layer of difficulty.
Breaking news on the wire. Here we go. Breaking news on the wire from our reporter, Alec Lewis, in Kansas City. Edilberto Mondesi has ripped his ACL.
Oh, okay. Well, that sucks. And provide some clarity.
Puts a hole in our rundown.
That's a season-ending tear. It's not like a small tear, right? It's a season-ending injury.
Yeah. I don't know that I have more details than that. He says he has an ACL tear. There are non-incomplete tears, and there are, like, you can do something to your MCL. Like, for example, I was just talking to John Gray, and he has an MCL issue, and he said, you know, it's a small sprain or something, but the sprain is a tear. So he has a small tear in his MCL, but it's like a side-to-side thing. For a pitcher, it's not as big a deal. And he says he's going to be back in a week or two. So there could be a chance where it's a smaller tear and he comes back. That stuff's coming out. I still think he's a drop in shallow release because he's a guy you have for steals. And it's going to be at least a couple months. And if you have any sort of backlog in your IL situation, which most of us do at this point, or you don't even have an IL, then I think he's a drop.
It didn't take long for the IL spots to fill up in the leagues where we have those available. I would say in general, if we didn't have an injury for Mondesi right now, what you spent to get him on your team doesn't necessarily matter. It's more about the format. It's more about who you'd pick up to replace him if you're going to drop him and who else you could consider dropping to get that replacement. All of those things that usually go into an add drop decision are all in play here.
I mean, he still has those 5 stolen bases. Like, if he was still playing and it was anything deeper than 15 or deeper, I'd probably hold on to him just for the stolen bases.
I still think even in leagues more shallow than that, there would have been a better case to wait it out a little bit longer than to just drop him 15 games in. But a 37% K rate is the worst we'd seen so far. Power hasn't been there to this point. I mean, there were definitely some concerns, a ton of ground balls. Highest ground ball rate of Mondesi's career so far, too. So now with this injury, and assuming a very lengthy absence, even in a 10-team or 12-team keeper league where you're keeping 10 players, now the question is Mondesi a top 100 sort of player looking to the future? Answer might be no. What's the case for him as is staying in the top 100, given this ongoing issue with injuries? And it's not totally unlike Byron Buxton's career arc from an injury perspective, but we're not seeing the underlying growth.
Yeah, it's worse from a player production standpoint. Yeah. In terms of player skills, like, he has not cut his strikeout rate, it's only gotten worse. He's not cut his swing strike rate, it's only gotten worse. This is his best year for chase rate, but it's traditionally been very bad, and it's not necessarily helping his game right now other than having a slightly better walk rate. Sometimes chase rate is not something that people should chase,
like, not in isolation.
Just because a guy improved a chase rate by itself, like, isn't good, because right. He obviously does not have a good sense of the zone. So if he's not chasing, he's not swinging. That means he's looking at strike three more often, which is why strikeout rate went up. And not swinging is correlated with production. However, it is correlated with a higher strikeout rate. So ideally, you'd have somebody with a lower strikeout rate that starts chasing less. That could lead to power. That could lead to maybe slightly few more Ks, but more walks and more power. So that's the story of chase rate. So yeah, in this case, I would look at this and be disappointed in his skills growth.
The BatX rest of season projection for Mondesi at the time of this injury is one of the most unusual projections I think I've ever seen for a player. It's a 215 average, a 260 OBP, a 358 slugging percentage, 13 homers in 516 plate appearances, and 39 steals, which, I mean, you almost can't make up a better fantasy player whose real life offensive value lags so far behind what he
reminds
brings for
like
our game.
Rougned Odor.
Yeah, it's kind of like that and runs more.
When Odor had like a 280 OBP and like was going 30-20 with terrible defense at second, had like a zero WAR and like had an amazing season for fantasy. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he looks like a below average player, and he's only even close to average because he has great defense. Because that bat line that you just read out, it leads to a 64 WRC plus, not normally something that anybody plays on their real life baseball team.
No. So to answer my own previous question, I don't see him as a top 100 keeper. I don't know if I see him as a top 150 keeper. I think he's a surprisingly difficult player to hold. If you're in a multi-year league and you're playing for now and someone else clearly isn't, I'm sure there's still something you can get back in a trade if you're holding more than 10 players.
I think it's probably like an old reliever. It's probably like a Anthony Bender or it's not exciting.
No, it's a sell low, but also, I mean, we know that based on the comments they were making, at least the Royals were beginning to reduce expectations for Adalberto
Not
Mondesi.
Even consider him a full-time player, as they were saying.
It's unfortunate, because there are very interesting tools here that just have not developed into the player that many of us had hoped.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
There are harder decisions, though, and I appreciate this one. You know, but the keeper aspect does make it a little bit tougher because steals are why you have young keepers. Steals are why you have Mondesi. Steals are difficult. If you do like a fade youngster strategy, as I often do in my dynasty leagues, and you go after, you know, mid-career veterans, it's harder to find steals. You know, like, you know, it's a lot harder to have Jose Altuve his first 5 years than it is to trade for Jose Altuve and get tons of value out of him the next 5 years, but not many stolen bases. You know what I mean? Like, that's why you have to have young players. Or, you know, what I'm trying right now in my 20-team dynasty is, you know, just have a lot of guys that are going to steal 10, which is, you know, obviously, if you've been listening to this, that's the theory. That's the way I've been trying to cobble together my steals this year. I would say returns so far are, I'm not last in steals anywhere. However, I'm not first in steals anywhere. So
I don't think you expected to be first in steals with that strategy, though. In leagues where I did that, I thought maybe I'll be fourth in steals and that'll be good enough. And if I'm sixth or seventh because I did other things well and didn't overpay here, I'll have better balance elsewhere. I'll have enough saves and I'll have better ratios. And I'll, instead of being mid-pack in a bunch of other categories, maybe I'm top three in everything else.
Yeah, I actually nailed it, like almost exactly what I wanted to do in labor right now, where I'm first by like 30 points. Yay, please, can I win?
early lead. You're the Mets of AL labor right now.
Shush! I thought you meant like historically.
No, yeah, I just mean like right now. Like that's the spot you're in.
I'll take being the Mets right now, yeah. There's like first has 18 steals, and second has like 17 steals, and then I have 11 steals. I'm third, and I'm in the pack. So there's another guy who has 10 and another guy has 9. So, like, you know, I'm in the pack, but I didn't want to be 18 and 17. That cost too much to me. You know, there was too much opportunity cost, too much actual sort of auction cost. I didn't want to spend it on that. So if I end up third in steals this year, I'll be ecstatic.
Yeah, I think that would be things working out really well based on how you put the roster together in the first place. The other question that was related to early drops was also a general question. The question came from Jack. And Jack wanted to know, in general, what would be the statistically significant number of at-bats and StatCast events to determine that a player just isn't cutting it this year? He's looking at Jonathan India specifically and bad stat cast numbers for India in a very limited number of events, 15 at the time of this writing, but also with a hamstring injury that's cost him some time. So he's considering cutting his losses. So as he's watching projections drop in real time and in a shallow league, is this enough to make a decision on a player like India, who I think finished pretty consistently inside the top 100 overall in terms of where he was going at the end of draft season.
Yeah, the difficult thing about stabilization is that it's not like you get to the point and then the magic happens and that's what you have the rest of the year. The what's happening at the stabilization point is that you now take more information for what they're doing currently than you do from league average or that player's personal average. So that doesn't mean more like 90%. It means more like 51%. Like, once you get to 50 balls in play, you can take 51% of their current barrel rate and then 49% of either league average or their personal average going backwards, right? So you'd still be regressing it, right? Like, so if somebody had a barrel rate like up into the season of 5%, and this season they had 20%. When they got to 50 balls in play, you would project them going forward for, why did I do this? Now I got to do math on the fly.
Half,
I screwed it up so bad.
Half of 20%?
You would take 10%, and then you'd add 5%. You'd have their 5% for four. So you actually, half of it would be 20%, and half of it would be 5%.
Yeah.
So you would actually end up with 12.5% projection going forward.
Right, so improvement, but not quite as much improvement as you regression. Had at this point. Right, so the regression right. from the new level, but improvement from the old one.
Yeah, so, with India right now, he's got 28 events. He's halfway to the halfway point. He had a 10% barrel rate or a 9.6% barrel rate last year, 3.6 this year. I would be looking mostly at a 9% barrel rate going forward. And that's not amazing. But it is a good enough number to hit the projections. Like, for example, the Bat X does all this for you and is, very sort of stat cast forward. And it's still projections for 17 homers going forward. Now, it's a little bit down off his preseason projections, but it's still 17 homers. I'm a little concerned that he has a hamstring injury and it hasn't taken off. And I think the Bat X includes a lot of that because attempts, I mentioned before, are sticky. Like, attempts are meaningful early. So the Bat X has him for the fewest amount of stolen bases going forward, 8. So, that's why I really like the Bat X. It does a lot of his work for you, right? But it does get even harder. I think with India, there's enough talent, and he's coming back, and I would wait at least a couple more weeks. He's not even at the, at 50 balls in play. So 50 balls in play. We could take India here and double it. 50 balls in play is about 20-25 games. So for the people who've played all month, you're almost getting there. Let me look at leaders in batting Statcast. Yes. So like Giancarlo Stanton has 45 balls in play and a 24% barrel rate. That's insane.
A 24% barrel. Yeah. I mean, what? A 24% barrel rate. Sure. Yeah, that's normal.
For him, it's not that far off. If it's 17% career, 24%, 45 batted balls, I would say that he's like, he might have a pretty good year this year. And his ISO right now is 150. So he would be a buy low. I think that's the kind of analysis you can do. But he's at 45 balls in play. Most people, Trey Mancini's at 50 balls in play, has a 12% barrel rate. That's good news. But even, like I said, even at 50, you would be still looking at half of what they're doing now and half of what they did before. There's other things that are slightly faster. I know that we were looking, I don't know if this is, it's not officially on the rundown, so I'm going to throw this in there. I had someone talking with me about the decision between Brian Reynolds and Taylor Ward. And Brian Reynolds' Statcast page, he's doing everything wrong. It's all terrible. And Taylor Ward is doing everything right. It's all beautiful. You can still use the Bat X rest of season projection as a guide, and it says $14 for Brian Reynolds and $1 for Taylor Ward. Now, there's some playing time stuff there. So what if you say they get equal playing time going forward? I think that is where the assumption falls apart a little bit. Because in order to give Taylor Ward full playing time, who are you docking on the Angels?
Joe Adell. And the question with Joe Adell, we talked about the strikeout rate kind of being elevated mostly against the Astros, still looks bad for the season at 38.9%. I mean, he's gone back to 2020 Joe Adell strikeout rate levels so far this season. He'd be the guy that loses time if Ward's going to play more. And Brandon Marsh would probably lose a little bit too. But they're leading off Taylor Ward. Like, clearly there's some sort of internal like or belief in what he's doing.
It almost looks like there's a fair amount of Marsh Adell platooning.
Yeah.
Where Adell's getting the short side of it.
So if that's the plan and Ward has a spot to call his own most days or almost every day, and he's leading off for that lineup, which is healthy right now.
Then it gets closer because the Bat X projections for 430 plate appearances for him. And for Brian Reynolds, it's for 580. So let's bump a Ward just on playing time. Let's bump him to $3 versus $14, right?
Okay.
I'm giving Ward a lot more playing time.
Yeah, so
maybe even $5.
Five versus the 14. Okay, you still want Reynolds, but I look at players like Taylor Ward, and I look at shallow leagues, and I think this is what makes shallow leagues hard, and the people that knock shallow leagues are wrong to do so, because if we get to the end of the season and Taylor Ward's a $20 player and Brian Reynolds is a $10 player, is it really that surprising? Even though the projections right now are so different, when you start to look at how he's being used, the playing time's no longer a question, the gap between the lineups, the underlying skills, part of what's messed up with Taylor Ward's projections is the lack of productive big league seasons prior to this one. I mean, he was pretty decent last year as a part-time player, right? He was a 111 WRC plus guy. So there's some evidence that he can be a good, steady contributor and have a good enough OBP to be in the leadoff spot.
Killing the minor leagues in the meantime.
Yeah, I don't. It's been a long road, but the baseline projection is still a little bit light because of pre-2021 numbers, and we just haven't seen it as an everyday player at the big league level before. But I don't think this is totally unheard of. Look at his O-swing percentage. 18.1% right now in these first 11 games. Walking more than he's striking out less than ever so far.
And swinging strike rate. So here's one place where Reynolds is probably going to beat... Ward is probably going to beat Reynolds. In swing strike rate takes, I think it was like 150 pitches for hitters.
We're pretty close to that already, aren't we?
Oh, we're past
easily.
That.
Yeah, you're seeing that's like 12 games.
You can take about four. You can take about four pitches.
Yeah, so that happens in a couple weeks. That's quick.
Let me see here. Let me make sure that I've got that right. So swing strike rate. I like this. There's a post called Long Needed Update on Reliability on Fangraphs. It's a little bit old from 2016, but what's cool about it is it has a interactive graph where you can kind of look at things. So you can change the denominator, and I think the denominator is all pitches and swing strike rate. And then you look for where it passes over 0.75. That's the reliability rate. And it does so at about 260 pitches. So divide 260 by 4, and you're talking about 70 plate appearances. Did I do that right?
Close. 65, I think.
Yeah. So he's close, but Reynolds is past it, right?
Yeah.
Reynolds is past it and has the highest swing strike rate of his career. So I think it's like I think the strikeout rate is a problem for Reynolds. I think he's going to end up with I know the projections say, 20-21%, but I would lean more towards a 25% strikeout rate the rest of the way. Which means that I don't then believe his .275 batting average. If he has a 25% strikeout rate, I would believe more of a .240-.250. Now we're taking money away from Brian Reynolds, right? Mm-hmm. Now here's a guy who's 14. If he's going to hit 250, he's more like a $10 player, like you're saying, right?
10 or even less, potentially. I think a good bit of that value comes from his average.
Right. And he's had those high 300s averages, in his full seasons. And that's why, it looks like, that's what he'll do. But he also had better strikeout rates back then. The barrel rates for him, he's at 43 events with a 7% barrel rate. and he's had an 8.8% for his career, 10% the last couple of years. I would say, you know, going forward, I project him for basically his career barrel rate, like an 8.5 or something. So that's less power than he's had in the past. And I think the Bat X shows that. It has the lowest power projection for him, 17 homers. So basically, if you think Taylor Ward can hit better than 260 and hit more than 17 homers and steal more than four bags, man.
I think he could do those things. Like, that's very reasonable to me. At the very least, I think you've talked me...
He's projected for 248, 14.5, so...
You've talked me out of Brian Reynolds as an early season buy low to go target and trade. So at least that is clear. Whether I would actually
it's
drop him or not.
It's harder with drops, right? Because you're just like, man, you're just going to drop this guy? He could have value. But this the person who was asking me also had, like, Jesus Sanchez, right?
He's up right now, too.
And it's like, so you're in the kind of league where... You know, am I going to take this? Am I going to keep this hot thing or am I going to go? And I told him, in my defense, I at least told him not to use a waiver claim on Brian Reynolds, right? Because he's in this 10 or 12 team league. He's a high waiver. And I said, don't use the waiver claim because there's nothing like really compelling about Brian Reynolds. You don't want to spend extra resources to get him. Now, the second question is, do you drop Taylor Ward or Jesus Sanchez for him? And I hemmed and hawed with him. As we sort of looked at the different things on Twitter, I would say that I lean towards keeping Sanchez and Ward over Reynolds.
Sanchez is still on a 30 home run pace, which is more or less what he was on last year at the big league level. He hit 14 in 64 games.
He does have worse strikeout rates, but you know his strikeout rates might be very similar to Reynolds going forward. So you might actually have a similar 250 batting average projection for both of those guys going forward, and yet you would project Sanchez for a lot more homers, better max exit velo, better barrels, better hard hit, close to being where he was last year with barrels. So that now you have 200 batted ball events for him with like a 12% barrel rate. So now you can sort of believe the whole track record with Sanchez. So the power is real. You know, unfortunately, maybe not the 277 batting average right now, but this looks like a guy who can hit 250 with 30 homers this year.
Oh, this game is fun. It really is. It's hard every single year. Brian Reynolds is the kind of guy that 4 weeks ago you would have said he's one of the more stable, middle-of-the-order guys around. Even if he's not like a big power guy, not an early rounder, he does everything well. There's so many ways for it to go right, and there still are a lot of ways for it to go right. But just that little drop compared to some guys that were going even 100 picks later, the case of Ward, guy that wasn't even being drafted at all, can put him into a coin flip scenario less than a month into the season. Like that to me just seems like the makings of a very difficult game to play.
Yeah. It's funny. I don't have any shares of Brian Reynolds, and it's not that I meant it or that I was fading him. He didn't fit any needs for me where I was like, oh, he can be a stolen base guy later in the draft. I was like, I don't know, really, you know? I guess I could have ended up with him as a batting average, guy, but he just, I don't know. He just didn't go where I needed or where I was looking for outfielders. So, It's a little bit more difficult because I don't have any personal stakeholder in this argument. You know, I'm kind of like, yeah, let him go, or I don't care. You know, but I do think the most worrisome part of his line is the swing strike rate and the strikeout rate. Let me look at the strikeout rate reliability. That's just all at bats, or is that plate appearances? It's plate appearances, strikeout rate. You're looking at. Okay, so you're looking at 135 plate appearances for strikeouts. So he's not quite there yet, but the swing strike rate is an indicator that it's going to be bad.
It is an early concern, to be sure. Thanks a lot for that question, Jack.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, you know, let's get back to a few more questions here. There's another question from Jack about Stuff Plus and Pitching Plus. He just wanted to know, what's the corollary to the hitting question? What's the statistically significant number for Stuff Plus numbers? I know you've talked about three starts being really important as we look at Stuff Plus and Pitching Plus, and at roughly how many pitches thrown should we start to read those numbers as either red flags or green flags? An example, Tyler Wells putting up great Stuff Plus and Pitching Plus numbers so far, but the results have not followed.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at Pitching Plus, that's where we did a lot of the validation. You know, Pitching Plus beats ERA after like 50 pitches. So ERA is not very good. We all know that. It beats DRA shortly after that, FIP at about 200 pitches. So already there, you know, you're looking at FIP. Some people will look at FIP and say, oh, he has a, you know, 5-8 FIP or whatever. You already want to rather look at Pitching Plus over FIP at 200 pitches. So that's like, you know, three early starts this year, or, you know, two starts for guys who had more bulk. You know, so I've got the, it's actually sorted for pitches right now, I believe.
Hey.
So, you know, Corbin Burns, 382 pitches with an excellent 108 pitching plus, bing, bang, boom. Chris Bassett, you could focus too much on his 95 stuff plus, but you'd be missing 102 pitching plus and a great home park. So, you know, I think that should help you understand, like, Chris Paddock at this point, you know, if you're too, like, zoomed in on the Stuff Plus, which is a 93, it's been 94 for the last two starts, then you'll miss the fact that he has a 108 location plus, 109 location plus, 108 pitching plus. So I think one of the things that the Twins did were just like, let's put you throwing these pitches in better locations. You know, I think that's been the big difference, because it's a little bit harder to, like, affect pitch movement change in 2 weeks with a new pitcher you just got, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit easier to just be like, hey, we want you aiming your fastball a little bit higher, or this or that, right? And so I think that's been the big thing for him. And he's at 231 pitches. So I would look at his pitching plus over his FIP right now. So, you know, that helps answer your question. I do hew closer to Stuff Plus earlier in the season. I think it becomes meaningful a little bit quicker, and it's a little bit more stable over the course of the season. But for basically the top 10 pitchers and pitches thrown, they're already at the point where their pitching plus is amazing. I guess that would make it a little bit worrisome for Logan Gilbert, who's got a 98 pitching plus with a 100% stuff plus. He's a little bit over his head, as much as it pains me to say that, because I predicted him to be the best pitcher on the Mariners. I do think he's a decent sell high. I mean, right now you could probably get a lot for Logan Gilbert, and you might even be able to get a struggling pitcher with good pitching plus back. You know what I mean? So you might be able to trade Logan Gilbert for a hot start, like a Mackenzie Gore plus a bat you really need. Mm. You know, that might actually make sense. I'm looking for a struggler up here. You know, Kyle Wright. Like, if you got Kyle Wright, I mean, I guess you probably wouldn't. He's too hot right now. What are Tarek Skubal's overall numbers look like? He's got a 102 pitching plus.
Skubal's overall numbers, I don't think are bad, because I know he had at least one start that maybe fixed some things.
Really good.
He is sitting at a 230 ERA, 109 whip right now, so you're not getting a deal with Skubal.
Well, all the guys right now with a good high pitching plus, I'll throw the update on the Google Doc. The Google Doc right now
is the link. The way to find the link is to look at my last piece about stuff and look in the comments. I know that's super inelegant, but I can tell you behind the scenes, we are actually moving towards something better than a stupid Google Doc link.
Do you have a Bitly link at least? We could do that. Could put that in the show notes.
I'm keeping it for subscribers only right now.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
But I you know, the smaller the sample, the more I look at Stuff Plus to answer that. And then once, you know, you get past 300 and 400 pitches, Pitching Plus is the powerful tool, because, and the way this works is on a given single pitch, this is the weirdest thing. On a given single pitch, location matters more than stuff. Like on just one pitch. The whole problem is the implication of that. You could say, oh, then command matters more. The problem is it's harder to replicate a given location than it is to replicate a given shape.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
It's harder to like put the ball on a tee than it is to just have 10 inches of drop on your curveball every time. Well,
it's hitting the driver really far and doing that consistently. That part's easier, but getting the ball to go exactly where you want it to go, that is harder.
But the drives where you do get exactly where you want it to go, those are the best. Mm-hmm. but which aspect are you going to chase? You know, which one is easier to chase? So that's a little bit of what's going on in baseball writ large. And that actually is part of my hit by pitch piece today with Britt Giroli, is that there you can blame the ball if you want for the offense being down. I think that's a big part of it. But when it comes to hit by pitches, there are lots of long-term stuff going on in baseball that have to do with hit by pitches that have nothing to do with the ball. And this conversation we just had is a little bit part of it. So for guys that have fewer pitches, maybe who's a guy with fewer pitches that has standard, like a Spencer Strider or whatever, there I'm really excited. Mitch Keller is a really interesting one because he's got 300 pitches thrown. He's got a 109 stuff plus, a 102 location plus, and a 102 pitching plus.
Yeah,
I know he's been struggling, and I know he's not a perfect pitcher, but if you know, I think this week was a good time to pick him up for the double tap at home, right? Wasn't it? Milwaukee.
Yeah, it was a two-start week. And I was watching the start against the Brewers, and I'm still frustrated watching him, even though the underlying numbers are good and pointing in the right direction. And there's no...
It's not good command. It's okay locations, but it's not good command.
There's no reason for the Pirates to give up on him now. He's showing enough improvement where they are fully justified to just keep throwing him out there every fifth day and seeing what happens. Why do you think he insists, or they insist, on having him throw his fastball as much as he does? It's so much fastball.
Well, right now he loves it because it's 98-99.
I know that, but with the added velo, I know it's better than it was.
He also he doesn't have great natural command, so I don't think he has a great command of the secondaries, you know?
I guess that's it, but it just makes him too predictable. You just sit fastball.
Yeah. I still think Tony Gonsolin is just a fascinating case. I'm not that in on him. He's got a 91 stuff plus, 97 pitching plus. His last start was the first one over 100 pitching plus. He's like Drew Rasmussen in that he throws like 70 to 80 pitches a start, so he's going to be tough on quality start and wins leagues. But he's unlike Drew Rasmussen in that Drew Rasmussen's pitching plus line, even with his diminished stuff this year, is better across the board. And we just had his best pitching plus stuff numbers for this season. I do have numbers by appearance here. Gonsolin, in his best appearance, his last one, had a 94 stuff plus, his first time with an above 100 location plus, 102 pitching plus. But every time before that, he was well below average in all those. Rasmussen has been developing a two breaking ball approach, and in his last start he was able to differentiate them well, but pitching plus still doesn't like the shape of his fastball, his four seam fastball, but if you were comparing the two, I would rather have Rasmussen than Gonsolin, and part of that is the pitching plus model. Did I answer the questions? I mean,
I think you did. And
the big numbers are 250 when it beats FIP, And then 300 to 400 is when it beats preseason projections.
Is Charlie Morton a buy low for you?
Ooh, yes, that's a good note. That was actually the name I was going to come up with, like Gilbert for Morton plus.
Right. Doable now, wasn't doable a month ago.
Yeah. 106 Stuff Plus says the stuff is not, it's below where it used to be, but it's not terrible. 98 location is not great. 99 Pitching Plus is not great. But I still look at that 106 Stuff Plus and say, man, this is a guy who still has above average stuff and he's made it work. And what's missing right now are his locations. And it's not like he has a reputation for being a wild child with terrible command. So I think Charlie Morton is a buy low.
Figured. I figured he would be. But wanted to throw it out there because I think he's one of those guys, because he's a little older especially, I think you have people more willing to move on and meet, deal him a little bit low. I think that's at least an attainable sort of buy low target. A lot of times the buy lows that you want to go get, the person that has that player is not necessarily interested. I think that could be a little bit different, mostly because of Morton's age.
And injury, but I mean, he pitched on that injury. I'm still in. I think he'll drop in my rankings, but I don't think I'll push Gilbert as much as people expect me to, because I had him in the top 40, right? So I think that Morton will drop to, you know, the 30 somewhere, and maybe Gilbert will jump to the 30 somewhere, but then they'll be like surprisingly equivalent, and so you could pull that move where you're like, I'm not really dropping that much in pitching, and I might get this extra bat or something I need, you know?
No, I think that's a really good point. Thanks a lot for that question, by the way, Jack. Let's get to another question. This one came in from Robert. Robert was curious if there's any correlation between teams that foul off more pitches and thus see more pitches and having higher OBP or OPS. Is fouling off pitches a skill that could lead to better results for a player or a team, or is it more of a byproduct than a true skill? So I started to look at the Sabre site, digging in to see if anyone had researched this before, because this
is because I saw it at a Sabre seminar, yeah.
Right. I found a study. Maybe this is the one that you had either saw a presentation on or have read before. This one was from Dr. Jeffrey Howard. He was looking at foul ball accumulation relative to hit probability. So his particular study,
that sounds right.
It split everything out like this. There was inside the count situations, which were the first two strikes accumulated were foul balls, and that would be like a poor pitching situation. Hitter was almost on it, but not quite on it. And then there's outside the count. The first two strikes were a combination of called or swinging strikes. Good pitching, right? And you get some foul balls in there. Hybrids that were anything where foul balls were in the middle were thrown out.
In the good pitching scenario, the foul balls are maybe an indication of a two-strike approach.
Yes.
Where the batter is like sort of, you know, not taking his A swing and just trying to get make contact.
Right. And then in this study, the hybrid stuff was thrown out, right? Because not every sequence is going to be completely inside or outside the count with the foul balls. You could have one foul ball among the first two strikes. Those were just discarded to try and hone in.
So he's kind of looking only at the extremes a little bit.
Right. Just to figure out, you know, what happens here. So,
Andrew McCutchen has his first home run. Ding, 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 ding.
I was going to make a DFS lineup, and I got busy getting ready for the show, and he was going to be in it because it was a righty-lefty matchup, and he was leading off.
Lefty,
he was cheap.
That's right.
I'm sure he was popular.
He just lead off the game. He got a homer off of Quintana. That's money you could have had.
The DFS lineups I didn't play. A paper that no one wants to read. So,
all right. So what happened with inside out? Inside was, what was inside again real quick?
Inside the count with the first two strikes accumulated were foul balls. Outside the count with the first two strikes were a combination of called or swinging strikes. Okay. So hybrids thrown out. And the key findings, which also included a link back to some previous work. I guess there was a study from William Giuliano that showed that hitting a foul ball for the first strike did not provide conclusive data when it comes to predicting hitting success via batting average. So the paper that came from Dr. Howard put forth the argument the foul ball is a ubiquitous data event that should garner more serious consideration in the pitching change process. Foul balls are far more than simply a drag upon game flow. They are data-rich events that, when assessed cumulatively and in tandem with knowledge of the historical data on hit probabilities, can provide valuable insight into pitcher fatigue and batter hit success. So there was a big difference in outcomes, whether it was the inside the count accumulation or outside the count. If it was inside the count, batting averages, hit probabilities ended up being much higher than if it was outside the count. So it really, the answer to the original question that was sent to us.
So a pitcher gives up a lot of foul balls and a hitter is hitting foul balls, that's likely to end up in a hit.
Yeah, if you're fouling off pitches early in the count, that led to more hits at the end.
But the two-strike approach, yeah, that two-striker person is battling, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's not as good a situation.
Yeah, so
does make it difficult to just look at a batter and say, oh, this batter fouls off a lot of, you know, balls. I want him. Like, I remember when I looked at it, the types of batters that fouled off a lot of balls were Pablo Sandoval types. And you don't necessarily, you may want one or two. It's like, I think of like Eddie Rosario, Pablo Sandoval types, right? They don't have a great sense of the zone. They have good bat to ball and they swing a lot. And so that lends itself to foul balls, but it's not something you necessarily want to, you know, depend on long term. Because as you start to age, you can't make as much contact, and this turn into strikeouts pretty quickly. You know, just missing, like you're just missing the ball. Do you really want to bet on someone who's just missing the ball?
Generally, no.
That turns to over time to more missing the ball, to completely missing the ball.
So I came away from this particular study thinking it was more about pitching performance than hitting performance, just the way it was studied here. I still think I would consider someone fouling pitches off early in the count. I would consider that to be better than taking called strikes or swinging and missing, right? So there is some value in fouling pitches off relative to the other outcomes for a hitter. I think it's really difficult to nail down what exactly they are and how we should value it, at least at this time it is.
Yeah. And then, you know, when we last looked at foul ball rates, didn't we look at sort of cumulative foul, like just how many pitchers gave up foul balls? Like we looked at number, not rate, right?
Yeah. And it's so, a work thing. How many extra pitches do you have to throw because of foul balls?
But also, like, we had a list of pitchers that, like, seemed like pretty good pitchers. But if you're going to do anything by bulk rather than rate, then pretty good pitchers are going to get to the top because they're the ones that are allowed to pitch more and they get more bulk. You know, mm-hmm. So I've got it right now by percentage. I need to maybe change the minimum number of results to see if I can get a better. All right. So here are the leaders among pitchers in foul ball percentage rather than rate, rather than bulk. Phoenix Sanders. Do you know what that
is? Did you just make that player up?
No. Ethan Roberts.
Continue.
Yeah. Taylor Clark. I think.
I've heard of Taylor Clark. Okay. We're off to we're Diamondbacks.
Okay. Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Tanner Banks.
What is this list? Is this a joke? Are you just making up players? Are these MLB The Show players that I've never... Like, what?
These are the guys who are giving up 30% of their pitches or foul balls.
Hmm. Okay.
There is a good name on here, Justin Verlander. However, one thing that's interesting about Justin Verlander is that he has lost ride on his four-seam fastball. And so this may be a little bit of an interaction between where he's aiming the ball and what kind of ride he's getting compared in the past. The next name, Robert Suarez, it has good stuff, but really, really bad command. And AJ Minter is also next on that list. I think he's in that sort of bucket, pretty bad command, good stuff. Jonathan Loaisiga is eighth. His stuff has diminished this year.
Yeah, he's struggling early. He's
not quite where he used to be. The most interesting young name on here is Mackenzie Gore at 10th. When I look at his per pitch stuff numbers, I find it really important, really interesting. And because Mackenzie Gore is a name that people are kind of wondering right now if they've got a star on their hands, you know, or you know what's going on with him. I do want to kind of run through his per pitch numbers because I find them really interesting. Mackenzie Gore's slider has a 131 stuff plus. So that is a legit pitch. Mackenzie Gore's four-seam fastball has a 104 stuff plus, which is pretty good. So that's a pretty good two-pitch combo. But his changeup is 90 and his curveball is 75. And he still throws them a fair amount. So It's a really interesting, isn't that interesting for a young pitcher to have like this kind of elite two-pitch situation, or not elite, but like above average good two-pitch situation, but be constantly throwing these subpar pitches still? Overall, you'd say it's an okay sign though, right? Because it's like, well, at least he has these four pitches, right?
He's got four, and you want him to throw two a lot more than the others, and he throws the fastball quite a bit. I think he was over 60% fastball usage when I looked at it last.
And it's good to have a good fastball. I mean, that's where Gilbert started, right? Gilbert has a good fastball, and the other pitches are not as good.
And I wondered if the arc for Gilbert is one that we have to be mindful of with Gore, where we're going to have a run where he looks really good, and the league's going to start to figure out the two-pitch mix a little bit, and if the other stuff doesn't come around, maybe as teams get second and third looks at him, especially in division, they're going to start to hit him a little bit more than they're hitting him right now. But if you said, hey, you found a top 40, top 50 starting pitcher on the waiver wire after the first week of the season, that's still good, even if he's not an immediate star. And there's still a possibility that it does click, but he's probably more of a good matchup pitcher right now than a set it and forget it pitcher right now.
Yeah, and I think there's a little bit of risk with what happens when everyone's healthy, right? I mean, he has options. They do have five good, you know, Nick Martinez probably doesn't have options. And so even if Nick Martinez is not pitching amazingly, I think it would take a fair amount to like push him out of the rotation and Gore in. No?
Yeah, Nick Martinez does not have options left. I was just going to make sure we didn't have a Grizzly Adams did have a beard moment.
No, I don't think Nick. I mean, he exhausted his options and went to Japan and came back. So,
I'm not saying this at all to be rude or anything. I think it's a generally safe assumption that if a player in North America ends up playing overseas, it's probably because he's out of minor league options and there's just a better deal in a different league. Like that's, I think, a generally fair assumption to make.
To compare like to like, Nick Martinez's curveball is a 130 stuff plus. His sinker is an 89, four seam 87, and that changeup, which looks really beautiful, is an 80. But he locates it well and is an overall pitch, an above average overall pitch by Pitching Plus. But so, Nick Martinez is a much less exciting pitcher by Pitching Plus. And you could see them making the change. But the risk that they don't is probably going to keep him out of the top 50 for me.
You could pretty easily justify Nick Martinez as your long reliever, too. If Mackenzie Gore has two good pitches, Martinez really only has one. If Martinez is still struggling with walks, you could do that. It's not going to ruin
your
team.
More of a starter's repertoire, though, where it's like four meh pitches and an out pitch. I was really impressed with Nick Martinez because he took a pitch design course at Driveline and taught himself. So I'm really impressed with him as a person. I don't know exactly what will happen going forward with him and Gore, but that's I hope to get you guys access to per pitch stuff. We're talking on the level. I don't want to like make hard level promises, but we're talking like 2 or 3 weeks. I know it's way into the season and it's upsetting, but you know, what can you do? Things move slowly sometimes.
I promise very little most of the time because people can be pleasantly surprised instead of consistently disappointed. I find that's a safer place to live. So consider that as a possibility. If you've got a question for us for a future episode, ratesandbarrels@theathletic.com is a great way to reach us. You could also drop a question underneath this video in the comment section on YouTube. Be sure to hit the like button and subscribe to the channel if you haven't done so already. Get a subscription to The Athletic for $1 a month at theathletic.com/ratesandbarrels. Find Eno on Twitter @EnoSaris. Find me @DerekVanRiper. That's going to do it for this episode of Rates and Barrels. We are back with you on Monday.
Thanks for listening.